David Grimm, editor of Science's online daily news site, Science Now, is here with a wrap-up of some of the latest science news. Hi, David. What's new?
Hey, Rob. How you doing?
Well, thank you.
I got three great stories for you. As always, we're going to talk about male chimpanzees who exchange meat for sex, how sonar might not be as dangerous for dolphins and other marine animals as scientists have thought, and finally, finding some good fat in the body.
Well, we've got to start with the trade of meat for sex among chimpanzees. Males courting females?
Well, that's the idea. And chimpanzees, you know, they live in these group societies, and they actually also often hunt in groups. And they'll go after monkeys and other animals and, you know, tear them apart. And they share the meat amongst themselves. And scientists have seen before that male chimps will give females, you know, hunks of meat in exchange for sex. But usually what happens in these situations is that these females are in estrus or they're in heat. So the males sort of know they're going to get something in return. But researchers have also observed something more unusual, where they've seen male chimps giving meat to females that weren't sexually receptive. And they've wondered, well, why are these males giving females this meat if they're not going to get anything in return? And that's sort of what this study is all about.
Are the chimps thinking longer term for when the females are receptive?
Well, that was the idea. You know, maybe these males still want sex, but maybe they know they're not going to get it right away, but perhaps they're thinking over the long term that they might get lucky. And to show that that's actually the case, researchers studied 5 adult male and 14 adult female chimps living in the Ivory Coast Thai National Park. And they studied them over the course of 3 years. And some of the things they observed is what they expected. You know, after these chimps would hunt, they noticed the males sharing meat with females that were receptive and the males would get sex. But what the interesting thing that they saw that they hadn't observed before was that when the males gave meat to unreceptive females, the females remembered. And so when these females did come into heat, they were much more likely to have sex with the males that had shared meat with them, even if it was a couple of years later. They had these long memories about the generosity of some of these males.
How much more likely?
Twice as likely.
And the researchers were able to disambiguate the sharing of meat from any other things that the males might have been doing to court the females?
Right. There's a lot of confounding factors here. I mean, some studies have shown that males will share like nuts and fruits and other things with females to get sex. And also, females could be higher ranked than the males, and that may be leading them to be more likely to have sex or less likely to have sex. But the researchers did a lot of analysis. They controlled for all these factors. And what they found was at the end of the day, it was really the sharing of meat that was most tied to whether or not these males would get lucky, either immediately or further down the line.
Are the researchers speculating that this might have any overlap with our own species and the sharing of meat or other high-quality meals?
Well, that's one intriguing possibility. And obviously, a lot of times when we study animals, we're trying to learn more about ourselves. And some experts say this study may shed light on some early human civilizations. For example, successful hunters in ancestral and modern human tribes are known to have more wives and more children. And it could be meat sharing that's driving this phenomenon, even in human societies.
Okay, well, let's go next to dolphins and sonar. Not as harmful as previously thought?
Well, that's what this study seems to be indicating. And the concern has been by a lot of marine conservationists over the past 20 years that Navy sonar tests, so this is, you know, sort of blaring sonar under the water, has harmful effects on any type of marine life that uses their own sort of natural sonar to navigate the depths.
Yeah, I thought there had been a study in which some whales had beached themselves as a result of being confused by the sonar.
Exactly. And that was the concern, that this sort of artificial sonar was interfering with natural sonar and causing these creatures to get confused, to beach themselves. There's also been studies suggesting that sonar can even cause decompression sickness, what's known as the bends in humans, causing these animals to basically surface too quickly. But according to the authors of this study, those studies really haven't been very well controlled. A lot of them have relied on sort of statistical modeling rather than looking at actual animals, or they've looked at the animals only after they've been beached. So they haven't really looked at the animals before and after to figure out if it's a direct result of the sonar that these animals are having all these problems. So that's what they attempted to do here. And they looked at one particular dolphin. They sort of attached electrodes to its head, and it's not as gory as it may sound. There's actually a picture of it on the site, just to be able to tell how the sonar was interfering with the dolphin's hearing. And then they played a recording of some of the Navy sonar sounds in the past that had been linked to some of these beached whales and, you know, problems with other animals to see if it would have any effect on this dolphin. And what they found is that only when they played the sounds really loud and for an extended period of time, and when the dolphin was really close to the sounds, did it really interfere with the dolphin's hearing. And what they conclude from that is that doesn't really sort of jibe with what you'd see in a natural environment, because, you know, if a dolphin was really close to a loud sound, obviously it would move away. And the dolphin didn't have that option in this experiment because it was in a tank. So they're saying, you know, under natural conditions, we wouldn't expect dolphins or whales to be exposed to these sounds for such a long period of time that would actually interfere with, at least interfere with their hearing.
Now, you said this was in a tank. Could conditions in the ocean themselves be different? And so yield different results in terms of the sonar?
Well, exactly. And that's what some of the experts actually have a problem with the study, because they're saying, first of all, it's not under natural conditions. And even the authors admit that there are conditions that occur in the ocean that could actually cause sonar to be a lot more disruptive. One such thing is if the surface of the water is a lot warmer than usual, it can actually sort of trap the sound and create this sort of ping pong effect where the sound is sort of bouncing around in a specific area. And the dolphin would obviously hear a lot more of it than it would under normal conditions. Also, if there's cavernous areas of the seabed, the sounds can bounce around and become concentrated in a smaller area, and that might also amplify a sonar sound and could potentially disrupt what these dolphins are feeling. And finally, you know, some experts say, you know, it's not just sonar disrupting the hearing that's a problem. Sonar may cause marine animals to be more stressed or cause other behavioral changes that have nothing to do with hearing. So just because sonar doesn't affect a dolphin's hearing that much doesn't mean it's not bad for dolphins and whales and some of these other marine animals.
Yeah, I imagine if there was a loud, irritating sound here while we're working, that certainly would be a more stressful environment.
Exactly.
Okay, well then finally, good fat in the body. A lot of creatures rely on fat for warmth, protection.
Well, I guess what we're talking about when we say good fat here, Rob, is a fat that doesn't really seem to have any downsides. I mean, even what we call the white fat or adipose tissue, the jiggly stuff that some of us have around our midsections. I mean, obviously that can be bad for health reasons, but it can also be good, as you say, because, you know, it could keep us warm. But there's another type of fat called brown fat, which a lot of animals have, and especially baby animals and even baby humans have. And the purpose of this fat is almost sort of like a furnace for the body. Its main purpose seems to be to generate heat. And so it keeps, especially young animals that are exposed to the elements, it helps keep them warm.
So not just an insulator, but actually generating heat.
A heat generator. In fact, one of the researchers describes it as like the burner for the heater. But what scientists thought is that as people grow up, they lose all this brown fat because we don't need it anymore. And studies have sort of been contradictory, but no study has really conclusively shown that we, first of all, have a lot of this brown fat in our bodies when we're adults, or, you know, also that it actually serves any sort of purpose. So that's what researchers are trying to figure out in this new study is, you know, do we have it and does it do anything?
So how do you look for brown fat? Some sort of scan of the body?
Kind of. What sort of sets brown fat apart is that it's really metabolically active and it's consuming a lot of glucose and it's generating a lot of heat. So what a team of researchers did was they dosed 24 young men with radioactive glucose.
Is that dangerous?
I guess not, because they did it and the men consented to it. And this glucose tags metabolically active tissues, like what you would expect with brown fat. And then they turned the thermostat down to 16 degrees Celsius. So they made the room pretty chilly. And they used these, what they call a PET scan, which sort of scans for this metabolic activity. And these scans revealed that all but one of the men harbored these caches of brown fat in their neck, in their chest, and in their abdomen. But what was really kind of interesting is when the researchers rescanned the men at room temperature, the fat vanished. And the fat wasn't really disappearing, but it was turning out that the fat was sort of turning off. It wasn't as metabolically active anymore because the temperature had gone up. So this seems to indicate that humans, even like baby animals, well, first of all, they have this brown fat, but also that it has a function. It's turning on.
It's a temperature regulator.
It's a temperature regulator. It's turning on when the room gets too cold or when the environment gets too cold.
Does it correlate with thinner people if they have this brown fat?
Well, that's one of the other things that the study found, was that thinner people seem to have more brown fat than more obese people, which at first may seem kind of counterintuitive. Why would thinner people have more fat?
but it's more the type of fat rather than the amount.
And that seems to be the key, is that, you know, these thinner people, maybe they don't have enough of this insulating white fat, so they have to have another way of regulating their body temperature. So they would have maybe more of this brown fat that would help them, you know, generate heat when they got too cold. That's one idea. I mean, they obviously haven't shown that with this study.
So I imagine a big research direction would be how to change white fat into brown fat.
That's definitely a potential application here is, you know, if we put more brown fat in obese people or find a way to turn on some of the brown fat that's maybe already resident in these people but maybe not active, it might be a way to help them burn calories and potentially get thinner. But obviously anything like that is a long way off.
Okay, well, thanks, Dave. What else are you looking into for Science Now or on the policy blog, Science Insider?
Well, Rob, for Science Now, we're looking into stories about the link between climate change and forest fires and new insights into perception. And on the policy blog, we have a very interesting interview with John Holdren, who is President Obama's science advisor and has pretty much up to now maintained a media silence, but he's starting to talk to a few places. And we've got a nice long interview with him where he talks about everything from nuclear weapons in the United States to the future of our space program to even teaching evolution in the classroom. It's a really interesting read, and you can find a link to that on the Science Now homepage.
David Grimm is the editor of Science Now, the online daily news site of science. You can check out the latest science news, plus find a link to the science policy blog, Science Insider, at sciencenow.sciencemag.org.